He squeezed by a bus, hit the corner, and swung a left turn just as the light was changing, leaving the other car trapped in a snarl of traffic. "Nicely done," Teddy said. "Now I can get a new cell phone. Drop me at the shop and cruise around until I call you on it." Fred dropped Teddy off and sped away, just in case the man he ditched was looking for his car. The clerk in the cell phone store was confused. "You want to upgrade your system?" "No, I just want another phone." "But this phone works." "Yes, it does. I want to transfer the data on it to another phone. Can you do that?" "Of course I can. But to what phone?" "The one I buy." "What kind of phone do you want to buy?" "One that does the same thing this does." "You want to buy the same phone?" "If you've got it." "We have a newer version. Your phone is quite old." "The newer version would work the same way this one does?" "More or less." "What's the less?" "It would have more features."
"Would it have these features?"
"Yes, among others."
"Fine. I'll take it."
"So you want an upgrade?"
Teddy sighed.
"You win. I want an upgrade. Can you do it?"
"Of course."
"Fine. Transfer the data, except for the number."
"Sir?"
"I want a new phone number."
"You know, there are serious drawbacks to having a new number."
"Such as?"
"People won't be able to call you."
Teddy smiled.
"I certainly hope not."
Jerome hated to be the bearer of bad news. He had a wife and two small children. All he cared about was keeping his head down. Then he wound up in Fahd's office monitoring important calls.
"Now the other phone's dead," Joram said. He sounded like he was apologizing.
"Billy Barnett?"
"Yes."
"They're both dead?"
"Yes."
"But they could be activated again?"
"It's possible."
"Fine. Then you're done for the time being. You can go back to your post in the other room."
Joram struggled to keep the relief from showing on his face.
"Yes, sir."
Fahd stopped him. "But first, whose lines have you been monitoring?"
"Lance Cabot and Billy Barnett."
Fahd grimaced. "I'm afraid your memory is faulty. Whose lines are these again?"
Joram looked terrified. He gawked at Fahd stupidly, trying to divine the right answer.
I don't remember."
Fahd smiled.
"Yes, I didn't think you did. Good man. So you won't be mentioning any names to anyone. Am I right?"
"Yes, sir, absolutely," Joram said.
It took all he could do not to run out of the room. 18. Fred drove down the block and turned into Stone Barrington's underground garage. "The car that was following us is on the corner," Fred said. "He must have come back here when I lost him. What do you want to do about it?"
"At the moment, nothing," Teddy said.
"I'm not comfortable having someone watching the house."
"It's just until we leave for the airport."
"Am I driving you to the airport?"
"Teterboro. Stone, Dino, and I are going to France."
On his way in, Joan presented Teddy with 6 color prints of the passport photos.
"Will these do?"
"Perfect," Teddy said. "Thanks, Joan."
Teddy and Fred went on into Stone's study. Stone and Dino were drinking Knob Creek.
"Good, you're back. Care for a drink?"
"You too, Fred."
"I just wanted to report. We were followed by a man in a gray Lexus. He's currently parked on the corner of your block."
"I see," Stone said. He turned to Teddy.
"What do you want to do about it?"
"It's probably better he doesn't know we spotted him," Teddy said. "If he's still hanging around after we leave, Fred, feel free to beat him to a pulp."
Stone saw the photos in Teddy's hand.
"How did the picture come out?"
Teddy smiled.
I think it's some of Dino's best work.
Fuck you, Dino said.
What are you going to do with it? Stone said. I don't have the equipment to mock up credentials.
It's okay, I'll use an old one. Where's my suitcase?
I'll get it for you,
Fred said. He was back in minutes with the suitcase.
Teddy unlocked it and took out a bulging leather zip pouch, slightly larger than a wallet. He unzipped it and began leafing through IDs. They were credit cards, driver's licenses, and various credentials.
Ah, here we are, Teddy said. CIA credentials. What don't I need anymore?
Oh, here we go. Felix Dressler. Look at those sideburns. Major pain in the ass to put on. But shave them off and he'd look like me. At least he'd look like me in that passport photo, which means I can use these credentials. Gentlemen, meet Agent Felix Dressler on a long-time covert assignment just emerging from deep cover.
What assignment?
I'll come up with something.
So, what's his story?
Dino said.
I suppose he ought to have one, Teddy said. Can I get on the Internet?
Be my guest, Stone said.
Teddy sat down at Stone's computer, hacked into the CIA's site, and posted the credentials of Felix Dressler, establishing him as a longtime agent, the veteran of several clandestine missions. He designated a large portion of Dressler's file as classified, eyes-only material that could only be accessed by senior officers with top-priority clearance.
That'll do for now, Teddy said. I'll make up more background on the plane.
Fodd got the info on the plane from Joram and called his contact in New York.
Stone Barrington's private jet is a Citation CJ3+. If they head for Teterboro Airport, then that is the plane they will be taking. Tell your man to get the tail numbers and trace the flight plan. I'm told the jet does not have the range to fly to Paris nonstop. Find out where they plan to refuel on the way.
Do you want them intercepted at one of those stops?
If the opportunity arises where you have someone already in place, but it will probably be impossible. This is a tricky individual. I would like some assurance he didn't get off the plane.
I understand. It will be done.
See that it is. So far, your employees have proven to be utterly inept. If I am disappointed again, I will hold you personally responsible.
19. Stone Barrington laid in a flight plan, guided his Citation CJ3+ down the runway, and took off. In the back of the luxurious jet, Teddy looked across the Hudson at the receding New York City skyline. How long's the flight?
About an hour,
Dino said.
Huh?
Dino grinned.
We're going to D.C.
Oh?
This is a nice plane, but it can't fly nonstop to Paris. We're trading up.
For what?
You'll see.
It better not be a CIA plane. That would not be funny.
Never fear. No one even knows you're going. The plane's for me and Stone.
Who's providing it? Dino grinned.
Viv. One of the perks of being married to a company bigwig.
Dino's wife was the chief operating officer for Strategic Services, the second largest security agency in the country. They maintained a number of aircraft capable of international flights. An hour later, Stone sat down at Dulles International Airport, and they emerged from the plane to see a familiar figure walking down the runway.
Mike,
Dino said.
What are you doing here?
Mike Freeman, the head of Strategic Services, operated from his office in New York City, so his appearance in D.C. was a surprise.
I had a meeting with a few select clients, politicians who like to feel important. They don't really need protection, but it strokes their egos to have it.
and to be seen having lunch with the CEO of Strategic Services.
Exactly, Mike said. You wouldn't believe how many people were called over to our table for an introduction. Anyway, I was in town and I heard a rumor one of our executives was abusing her privileges by flying her husband around in company aircraft, so I thought I'd check it out.
I'm afraid you've been misled, Dino said. She's not flying me around. Stone batted his eyes at her and she can't deny him anything.
Mike turned to Teddy. I won't ask who this is. I'm sure the answer would be less than illuminating. Mike had offered Teddy a job once, any time Teddy wanted to take it. The offer was still standing. Good to see you too, Mike, Teddy said. Mike dropped the bantering tone and said, Is this anything you might need a little help with? I appreciate the offer, Mike, but at the moment I have no idea. Teddy said. Mike nodded. Viv was a little vague on details. How long do you need the plane for? It's open-ended, Teddy said. We're going for a joyride, and we'll be back when the thrill wears off. Sounds like just the type of deal I'd like to get one of my best aircraft involved in. Seriously, though, if you need help, whistle. Thanks, Teddy said.
Mike walked them to the plane. The huge Gulfstream G650 was indeed imposing.
It's not as luxurious as Air Force One, but I hope it will do. I also have to apologize for making you come all the way down here to get it. It flew in from England this morning, carrying a couple of diplomats, and they might have been grumpy if we tried to divert them to New York. Anyway, I hope it will be to your liking. I think I've flown it before, Stone said. Yes, that was a business trip when Viv actually had a legitimate reason to go to Paris, and you got to tag along. I believe this will be its first actual joyride. Anyway, it should be wheels up in half an hour. Mike put up his hands. Look, I know you like to fly, Stone, but if you don't mind, our flight crew will handle this one. Insurance purposes, you understand? If you were to drop it in the drink, we wouldn't be covered. Stone snorted. Anything else I can do for you? Mike said ironically. Does this hunk of junk have internet service? Teddy said. Not if you're planning on committing a felony.
Forget I asked.
20. Fodd snapped into the phone.
They what?
Flew to Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C. They'd landed before we even confirmed the flight plan.
What's their next stop?
We don't know. Stone Barrington has submitted no further flight plan. We're looking, but we can't find it.
I suppose a man with his amount of money could bribe someone to keep it off the books.
He can't take off without filing a flight plan. It isn't safe for other aircraft.
Is the plane still there?
We have men on the way to the airport. Confirming a flight didn't take off isn't as easy as confirming one did.
It's a diversion. They knew we would be checking reservations at JFK, so they flew to Dulles. Check reservations on every plane leaving Dulles for France for the names Stone Barrington, Dino Bachetti, and Billy Barnett.
Fodd slammed the phone down, went to the door, and bellowed,
Joram!
The techie looked up from his computer.
Yes, sir?
Get in here.
Joram swallowed hard, got up, and went into the other room, wondering what he could possibly have done wrong.
Sit at that computer. I need you to find some information, and I don't want to keep yelling for you.
Yes, sir. What do you need, sir?
Find out where Stone Barrington stays when he goes to Paris.
Joram looked up the question on the internet. The answer came back almost immediately.
Sir?
Yes.
Stone Barrington owns a house in Paris.
He bought it fairly recently. It's a modest house, but quite large enough to accommodate his friends.
Excellent, Fahd said.
He called Glenville, an independent agent he used sometimes in Paris. Glenville would have more flexibility than his other main contact in Paris, a carefully placed mole in the CIA office.
A man named Billy Barnett is en route to Paris. We've lost him along the way, but he's traveling with two men, Stone Barrington and Police Commissioner Dino Bachetti. Stone Barrington owns a house in town. Intercept Barnett there and follow him wherever he goes. Don't let him know he's being followed, but don't let him out of your sight. Let me know when you have him, and I'll send further instructions.
21.
You realize I can't stay at your house, Teddy said.
Teddy, Stone, and Dino were having a cocktail served by an attractive flight attendant.
I'll try not to take it personally, Stone said.
Why not? Isn't it a safe house you bought from the CIA?
Actually, it is.
Any connection to the CIA is bad for me.
Why? You're doing work for them.
You're supposed to be an agent.
Not one who's hanging out in a CIA safe house owned by a billionaire. That's a dead giveaway.
If Lance's phone was bugged and people are already trying to kill you, that ship has sailed.
That's true, Teddy paused, which makes this a suicide mission. I'm looking for a mole in the agency, and the mole already knows I'm coming.
Exactly. So why even continue with this plan?
It's risky, but I think it will still work.
The other agents won't know the truth. Since I don't know who's the mole, I have to keep up the pretense for everyone. If I do it well, the agent who's not buying it will be the mole.
That's your plan?
Dino said.
I haven't come up with a plan. At the moment, all I'm concerned with is not getting killed.
Anyway, I can't stay at the safe house. It's not safe.
So what do you plan to do?
I'm going to rent an apartment that a spy on the run might afford. Actually, I can use a little help with that. Stone, you have some experience buying real estate. Do you mind a little intrigue?
I wouldn't mind a little myself, Dino said.
Do you need an apartment immediately? Stone said. Unless you've got a better idea, I don't want to sleep on the street.
How about Larrington, the Paris branch of the Arrington Hotels, named after Stone's late wife, was one of the finest in the city.
What do you say we check in there for one night? The next day you can rent your apartment, and Dino and I will move into my house.
Works for me, Teddy said.
Great. I'll call them and get the royal suite.
Can you get it on such short notice? Teddy said.
Hey, Stone said. I own the place.
Yeah, Dino said sardonically. And he busts my chops about Peter Luger.
22. Joram jumped out of his chair.
Sir,
Fahd looked up from his desk. He was clearly annoyed.
Yes.
Stone Barrington's not going to his home.
What?
He's not going to the address I gave you. He just made a reservation at Larrington Hotel.
What?
Yes, sir.
He's staying at the Larrington?
Joram didn't point out that Fahd's use of the word the was redundant. The French L, meaning the, took care of it.
Yes, sir. The reservation just appeared for a party of three.
Damn.
Sir?
Why is he staying at the Larrington? He has a perfectly good house.
He also owns the hotel, sir.
Oh?
Half of it, anyway. A Frenchman named Marcel Dubois is the co-owner.
He's going to stay there the whole time he's in Paris?
That's hard to say, sir.
Well, how long is his reservation for?
Just for one night?
Fodd gave him the evil eye.
You could have said that to begin with.
Fodd snatched up the phone and called Glenville back.
He's going to the Larrington.
Sir?
The Larrington Hotel. Pick him up there.
He's not going to his house?
Not today. He's checking in at the hotel.
Do you have any idea when?
No, but you'll know it when it happens.
Stone Barrington owns half the hotel. His reservation includes Dino Bachetti and Billy Barnett. I assume you have located a photo of Barnett.
Of course.
He may look different. Our man in New York never spotted him. Do you have photos of Stone Barrington and Dino Bachetti?
Yes.
He'll be with them.
Let me out here, Teddy said. The car service was en route from the airport to the hotel.
You're not going to the hotel? Stone said.
If you wouldn't mind checking in for me, I have an errand to run.
Dino snorted.
Well, that could cover any act in the penal code.
Will you be back in time for dinner? Stone said.
Oh, yes. It shouldn't take long.
Teddy hopped out at the corner and strolled down the street. It was a 10-minute walk to a small antique shop that featured jewelry and knick-knacks. The owner was a diminutive Frenchman with a graying mustache. Teddy stepped inside and flipped Felix Dressler's new CIA credentials open on the counter. The owner took a look and cocked his head.
"Who are you?"
Teddy pointed to the credentials. The owner made a face.
"Please, do you expect me to be impressed by an amateurish set of phony credentials?"
Teddy smiled.
"That's hurtful, Andre."
Andre frowned.
"Do I know you?"
Teddy smiled.
"Under another name."
"What name?"
"Any name you like."
Andre blinked.
"Teddy?"
Teddy put up his hand.
Whoa, I don't know this man of whom you speak, but let's assume an acquaintance and take it from there. Can you do the work?
You want more CIA credentials?
Passports, actually. 6 of them, in 6 different names, all with this photo.
Teddy laid the 6 passport photos on the counter.
Can that be done?
Andre squinted at him shrewdly.
If the price is right,
name it.
After a short negotiation, Teddy and Andre agreed on a price.
When do you need these?
First thing tomorrow morning.
A rush order? You didn't say that.
You can't do it?
It will affect the price.
After another round of bargaining, they were agreed. 23. Though Glenville was used to a bit of unpredictability on the job, this mission was a bit of a mess. First, he was told to stake out Stone Barrington's house to pick up Billy Barnett, and it turned out nobody was going there. Then he was told Barnett was checking into Larrington with his friends, and the other two show up without him. Glenville had no trouble identifying Stone Barrington and Dino Bachetti from their photos, but Billy Barnett was not with them. They checked in for him and had his luggage sent up to his room. Only it wasn't a room with a number, something he could stake out and monitor when the man arrived. No, all three men were in the extensive royal suite, which in addition to the main suite had smaller connecting suites for members of the entourage. So Billy Barnett wouldn't have to go to the front desk like he would if he had his own room. He could go straight up to the royal suite and knock on the door. With that in mind, Glenville had taken the elevator up to the floor with the royal suite, only to find a man who was obviously a hotel detective lurking in the hall. So Glenville was hanging out in the lobby, keeping an eye on the front desk, in case anyone asked for a key to the royal suite. And an eye on the elevator, in case anyone vaguely resembling his photo of Billy Barnett came in and got on. It was not a great plan. Glenville figured he'd probably miss Barnett going in, but if the three men went out together, he'd have him. It wasn't perfect, but he couldn't think of anything better. He reminded himself to snap a picture, if by a miracle the man ever did appear. 24. Teddy showed up in a beret. Stone and Dino were having drinks on the balcony when the bell to the suite rang. Dino went to the door, looked through the peephole, and opened the door. Dino surveyed Teddy critically.
"I'm not sure it suits you," he said.
"It would if I changed my appearance, but then I wouldn't match my credentials." Teddy took off the beret and spun it like a frisbee in the direction of the couch.
"Ah, Paris in the springtime," he said. "Brings back memories?"
"Yes, and none of them good. Look, honey, there's the cafe where I killed the German courier." "Did you accomplish your purpose, whatever it was?" Stone said. "I stretched my legs. That was the main thing. Where's my suitcase?" "In your bedroom. Don't worry, it hasn't been touched. I don't think Houdini could get through that lock you have on it. Even so, I'd feel better not leaving it lying around in the room." "I could have the hotel lock it up for you in the safe," Stone said, "but that would call attention to it." "Not if you tell them it's yours. Put it in your room and change the luggage tag. You're Mr. Big Hotel Owner. They'll rent out Fort Knox for you." "Fine. Let's get it." Stone and Dino showed Teddy to his room. His mini suite could have passed for the presidential suite in most hotels. Teddy's suitcase was in the middle of his bedroom. The lock was clearly undisturbed. He hefted the heavy case onto the bed and punched in a code. Then he put his key in the lock. The sequence was important. Without the code, the key would not even fit. He turned the key a quarter turn, punched in a second code, and turned the key the rest of the way. He punched in a third code, opened the suitcase, and unpacked his clothes. Next, he took out a clear plastic zippered case crammed with packets of $100 bills. Teddy put the case in the room's safe. Not that Teddy trusted the safe, but it was only cash, a good deal of cash, but even so. Last, Teddy unzipped his heavy-duty equipment bag. He selected a spare burner phone and a gun and shoulder holster. He left his state-of-the-art, personally designed sniper rifle in the bag. He had no use for it as yet, and he felt better having it under lock and key. He slipped on the shoulder holster, closed the suitcase, and went through the ritual of locking it again. When he was done, he dragged the suitcase to the front door. Stone was standing there with a luggage tag. "Take your tag off and hang on to it," Stone said. "I know you don't want your tag on my case when I take it to my house." "Not exactly the back trail I care to leave," Teddy said. A bellboy came up to retrieve the suitcase. He had a hotel security guard with him. "Excellent," Stone said. "I need this locked up overnight."
"Yes, sir."
Stone slipped the bellboy a bill. The security guard regarded the money enviously. Stone smiled slightly and slipped him a bill, too. "Was that necessary?" Teddy said as the men took the suitcase to the elevator.
"What?"
"Tipping the guard?"
"It wasn't necessary, but when someone tries to take the suitcase away from him, I'd like him on my side."
"Well, now I need to get a suitcase," Teddy said.
"What for?"
"To put my clothes in."
"I could have them sent on."
"That would be messy, and I need the suitcase as a prop. I'll pick one up on our way back from dinner."
"Will anything be open that late?"
"Someone will have a suitcase," Teddy smiled. "Luckily, it doesn't matter what it looks like." 25. They dined at La Baye at the Hotel Shangri-La, a posh restaurant where dinner clothes were preferred and price was no consideration. At least it wasn't to Teddy and Dino. Stone was paying. There was a waiting list for La Baye. Dino might have made more of the fact that Stone was able to get a reservation had he not been distracted by the name of the restaurant. In keeping with its lush garden view, a bay meant bee.
"I know it's the only reason we're here," Dino said. "You have it in your mind that bee is for Barrington, like it's your own personal restaurant."
"Bee is also for Bachetti," Stone pointed out.
"Did I make the reservation? Did I order frog's legs, which are surprisingly good, by the way? Did I choose a place where I have to wear this monkey suit? I don't dress this well for the mayor's dinner."
Stone laughed. "Can you find him something to do on this trip, Billy? He's really cranky." Teddy grinned and dug into his escargot. "Enjoy the ride, Dino. This may be the last meal we have together for a while. Then you'll be stuck with Stone, and knowing him, he'll snag an attractive young dinner date, and you'll be on your own." Stone said, "You're not helping."
"Okay, Dino," Teddy said, "I've got a job for you, and it's not going to be easy. Are you up for it?"
"Sure."
"You know, there's a man watching us."
Dino raised his eyebrows.
"What?"
"He picked us up when we left the hotel and followed us here. He's out there sulking on the sidewalk while we're living the high life in here."
"Do you want me to have him arrested? I could call the prefect of police, and he'd be glad to oblige."
"I'm sure you could. I'm afraid it's a little harder than that."
"You want me to ID him without him knowing it? It's a lot harder if I can't arrest him."
"I can imagine." "No, not that."
"So, what's this really hard thing you want me to do?"
"When we leave here, and he follows us..."
"Yes?"
"Pretend you don't see him." 26. The next morning, Teddy woke up, showered, shaved, and left the hotel. His shadow was waiting for him across the street. Teddy smiled to himself. He hailed a cab and took it to a little bistro down by the Seine. It was a place, Teddy recalled, where it was hard to get a cab. One usually had to call for them. Teddy paid the cab off and went inside. The cafe was crowded at breakfast time. He tipped the waiter for a table with a river view. It was an unnecessary gesture. All tables had a river view. Teddy allowed himself to be seated and ordered coffee. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see his shadow accepting a table on the other side of the room. Teddy's coffee came. He took a sip, leaned back, and enjoyed the view. He was about to take another sip when he reacted, set the coffee down, and pulled out the burner phone he'd equipped himself with, and pretended to answer a call.
"Yes?
Now?" he sighed.
"Very well."
Teddy stuck the burner phone back in his pocket. He stood up, took a sip of coffee, apologetically palmed the waiter a bill, and went out the door. The taxi he'd tipped handsomely to wait for him was down the block. On seeing him, it drove in his direction. Teddy stepped out in the street and raised his hand as if hailing it by chance. He hopped in, and the taxi took off. Out the back window, he could see his shadow coming out the restaurant door. Teddy got out three blocks away, made sure no one was following him, and went into the antique shop. Andre was behind the counter enjoying an espresso and a scone.
"Taking a break, Andre?" Teddy said. "I hope that means you're done."
"Of course I'm done. When have I ever not been done? I do what I say."
Andre moved his espresso aside and put the passports on the counter.
"How do they look?"
Teddy said. Andre shrugged.
There's nothing I can do about the ugly man in the photo, but they'll get you in and out of the country.
Teddy picked up a passport and flipped it open. It was for Arnold Mycroft. He flipped open another one. It was an equally convincing forgery for Daniel Remington. He looked at the other passports, just for show, but they were perfect. He'd known they would be.
Great, Teddy said. I believe we're all square, then.
Andre coughed apologetically.
I realize you are kidding. Anyone else I would have to kill. There is a balance, as you well know.
And well deserved, Teddy said, handing over a roll of cash.
Will I see you again on this trip? Andre said.
Don't take this personally, but I hope not.
I understand.
Teddy came out of the shop. Once again, he made sure he was alone. He hailed a taxi and took it to the Gare de Lyon railway station. He made his way around the tracks on the main level and took the stairs to the concourse below. The bank of long-term lockers was right where he remembered. He rented 6 of them, one right after another. In each, he put a passport and $10,000 in cash. He took the 6 keys, left the station, hailed a cab, and returned to Larrington. The shadow was waiting for him. He was inconspicuous, but not to a man of Teddy's talent. It was all Teddy could do, not to wave to him.
27. Teddy joined his friends in the hotel dining room for breakfast.
Okay, Teddy said. Here's the plan. He was wasting his breath. At the moment, Dino's plan involved getting a second helping of Crepe Suzette. Stone's plan involved making his way through every English-language newspaper available at the hotel. Teddy smiled indulgently, then went and stood in line for his own individually prepared, made-to-order omelette. He opted for scallions and peppers. Returning to the table, he applauded his choice. Finishing his omelette, he pushed his plate back with an air of finality.
Okay, he said. It's time for me to check in with the CIA. That should be interesting. They won't be expecting me, except for the mole, of course.
Who is the station head? Stone said.
A guy named Norton. I don't know him, which is good. He doesn't know me either, but he's going to hate me a lot.
What for?
Dino asked.
Aside from just on general principles for pulling rank, giving orders, and not letting him into the loop, he'll fall all over himself to cooperate with me while hoping I get hit by a truck.
What's your cover story?
Dino asked.
Sorry, that's above your pay grade.
Is that what you're going to tell him?
See why he'll hate me a lot? I have no cover story, and it saves me having to make one up. And because my identity is marked as top secret in the system, he won't be able to call my bluff or do anything about it.
Teddy passed over a fat envelope.
Okay, Dino, you're up. Here's some Monopoly money, a burner phone, and a list of what I need. You're renting an apartment in the name of Fenton Town.
Should I claim to be Fenton Town?
Certainly not. You're Fenton Town's manservant.
Fuck you, too,
Dino grinned.
You're loving this, aren't you?
Welcome to the world of espionage. A lot of espionage is hiding in plain sight. I'm going to do what I have to do, and my tail is going to know some of it, and some of it he's not. Controlling what he knows, doling out only the information I want him to have, gives me the upper hand.
Tino grumbled good-naturedly.
I thought this spy stuff would be a little more exciting.
Don't worry. I'll get you some action.
Teddy went up to the suite and packed his clothes in the second-hand suitcase he'd bought the night before. He called the front desk and had a bellboy take the suitcase down and get him a cab. As he climbed in, he spotted his shadow, watching.
Teddy had the cab take him in the opposite direction from the apartment he'd rented over the phone the night before. After about a mile, he had the driver pull over and let him out. He stood on the street corner with his suitcase for a few minutes, then hailed a cab going the other way. He got out 3 blocks from his apartment and walked the rest of the way. The suitcase wasn't heavy. It held only his clothes, and not all of them at that. The super who lived in the basement apartment had his keys as promised. He surrendered them gladly, impressed with Teddy's CIA credentials. The apartment was what Teddy expected. A kitchen the size of a closet, a small living room, and a bedroom not much bigger. Teddy didn't mind. It was perfect for his purpose. Teddy flopped his suitcase on the bed and unpacked. It didn't take long. He put his toiletries in the bathroom, hung up his jacket, and put his clothes in the dresser. When he was done, he closed the suitcase and stashed it under the bed. He locked the apartment, went out, and hailed a cab. As expected, his shadow was right on his tail. 28. Glenville reported in. This morning, Billy Barnett checked out of the hotel and moved his things into an apartment. I followed him there and got his address. Glenville didn't mention losing him at the cafe. Indeed, his main reason for calling about the apartment was to head off any inquiry into what he'd done earlier in the day.
"He's there now?"
Fodd said.
"No, sir. He came right back out and went straight to the U.S. Embassy." "He's there now?"
"Yes. So he is who we thought he was."
"Good. Then our mole can take over. Back off and let things develop. I can't have you tripping over each other's feet. Do you want me to pick him up when he goes home tonight?"
"No need. We know where he lives. We know where he works. We can find him at any time."
"You don't want me to try to take him out?"
"No. This man has proven himself much too dangerous. I'm bringing in an asset. The man is an expert. You'll meet him and point out the target. He'll do the rest."
"Yes, sir. Do you want me to do whatever he says?"
"He won't say anything."
29. Aziz stood impassive, waiting for the assignment.
"You're going to Paris. You'll leave at once."
Fodd texted him a photo of Barnett that he'd received from Glenville.
"This is the target. At least this is how he looks now. 2 days ago he looked entirely different. He may look different tomorrow. It doesn't matter. Glenville will point him out."
Without moving a muscle, Aziz managed to convey what he felt about Glenville.
"The target is at the embassy to ferret out our agent. This must not happen. This must be handled quickly and without fuss. We do not need the French police on high alert. Not now. Not when we are all set. This operation must come off without a hitch."
Aziz didn't have to nod agreement. He was always in agreement.
"This man is a problem," Fodd said. "I have no time for problems. When we arrive in Paris next week, he must be gone."
30. The agent at the front desk was confused.
"You wish to see Special Agent Norton?"
"That's right," Teddy said.
"But you don't have an appointment?"
"No, I do not."
"Special Agent Norton is the station chief."
"I know. What is it you wish to see him about?"
"CIA business."
"Yes, of course. What specifically do you mean?"
"I have business with Agent Norton. I can't tell you what it is because it's classified, but it's high priority and I need to see him at once."
"You understand the problem?"
"Yes, I do. You are the problem. You only deal with matters that are routine. Anything important is above your pay grade."
The agent flushed.
"Now, see here. You have my credentials. Run them."
"Sir?"
"Run my credentials.
Shouldn't you know who you're dealing with before you refuse to let me in?"
The agent gave him a look, then turned to the computer. He punched in the code on the credentials. Immediately, a file came up. The agent blinked.
"This is all classified,"
Teddy nodded.
"Most of it. There's probably some stuff that isn't, but it won't be very interesting."
"What's your point?" Teddy groaned. Back in his years at the Bureau, this young man wouldn't have lasted a day. "Now, you know what to tell your station chief. An agent with such highly classified status you can't access it wants to see him. What would he like you to do?"
Minutes later, a rather wary Station Chief Norton ushered Teddy into his office.
"I'm Special Agent Norton, Paris Station Chief. Pleased to meet you. Agent Felix Dressler."
"What can I do for you, Agent Dressler?"
"To begin with, you could teach the young man at the front desk his job. An agent shouldn't have to jump through hoops to see you."
"To be fair, he didn't know who you were."
"Neither do you, but you let me in."
"I'm in charge of this station. I can do whatever I want without being second-guessed."
"To a certain extent, that's true."
Agent Norton bristled.
"Are you trying to tell me something?"
"Absolutely not. For the moment, we're just sparring with words."
"Why are you here?"
"I was brought out of deep cover and assigned to report to this station."
"Why?"
"That's a good question. I'm sure there's a reason. There's usually a reason for what the powers that be do."
"You don't know why you're here?"
"I didn't say that.
As to a specific assignment, it's sort of open-ended, but I was told I'd receive your full cooperation."
Norton wasn't happy with the answer. Teddy hadn't expected him to be.
"Are we being reassessed?"
"Certainly not."
"What would you tell me if we were being reassessed?"
"That you're not being reassessed."
Norton bit his lip. Teddy smiled.
"Hey, I'm on your side. Let's work together."
"What did you have in mind?"
"I'd like to meet your field agents."
"I thought you might."
"Will that be a problem?"
"Some of them are in the field."
"I'd like to meet the ones that aren't."
"Of course."
Norton picked up the phone.
"Felsen, send in Morrow, Reynolds, and Rowan."
He put down the phone and said ironically,
"Anything else you'd like?"
"Could I get a printout of the personnel?"
"Sure. Just fill out a requisition form."
Teddy smiled slightly.
"So you're not concerned about being reassigned?"
Norton tried to stare him down, but Teddy didn't blink.
"But you're not reassessing the station," Norton said sarcastically.
"Absolutely not," Teddy said.
After a moment, Norton gave in and picked up the phone again.
31. Agent Morrow was pudgy, as if he'd gone soft on the job from a combination of French food and not too much action. Teddy wasn't sure if that made him more suspicious or less. Agent Reynolds was wiry and athletic-looking. He seemed cocky, almost insolent. Teddy couldn't tell if that was a defense mechanism or just who he was. Agent Rowan was younger and more attractive. Or perhaps she just seemed younger because she was more attractive. At any rate, Teddy was impressed. Agent Rowan would not at all be unpleasant to investigate. The other two agents seemed to be vying to appear macho in front of her.
"I don't get it," Agent Reynolds said. "You're sent here for an undisclosed reason, and we're supposed to just take you in?"
"Yeah, I probably wouldn't like me much either," Teddy said.
"So where are you from?" Agent Morrow asked.
"You name it. I've been there."
"I meant just now."
"I know you did," Teddy said.
Morrow flushed slightly.
"He's been sent to work with us," Norton said. "For an undisclosed purpose even he may not know."
"Bullshit," Agent Reynolds said.
My sentiments exactly, Teddy said. Frankly, I wasn't happy to get the assignment.
But don't hold it against me. I don't like most of what I do.
May I assume, since you're all here, you are not specifically assigned?
Were you hoping to assign them? Agent Norton said.
I'm hoping to learn soon what the CIA wants of me and get out of your hair, Teddy said. In the meantime, if something comes up, I'm here. Not that I'm expecting anything. I'm trying to figure out if you are.
Agent Rowan smiled. She had a nice smile.
That's so reasonable, it's hard to hate you.
Trust me, people always find a way.
Teddy referred to the printout he'd been given.
Okay, that's Morrow, Reynolds, and Rowan. So I assume Agents Paul and Workman are on assignment?
Agent Reynolds looked at Norton accusingly.
How come he has a roster?
He asked, Norton said. You want one? I'll make you a copy. For the rest of the day, Teddy went through the tedious process of investigating the lower-level office personnel. Any one of them could have been the mole, but Teddy tended to doubt it. The person he was looking for would have more access to sensitive material than the average desk jockey. Still, he put secretaries through their paces and got a feel for the bookkeeper's grasp on the workings of the organization. Agent Reynolds went with him. Teddy said there was no need. He had the printout, and he could find the people by himself. But Agent Reynolds wasn't buying it. Under the guise of camaraderie, a thin ruse that fooled no one, he insisted on showing Teddy around. It didn't matter. As far as Teddy could see, everything was open and above board. Routine matters were being handled, and none of the people who were handling them were showing any of the nervousness someone with something to hide would. The first agent of any interest was a young man named Jacques, who sat scrolling through screens on his computer. It was near the end of the tour, and Agent Reynolds was taking a bathroom break. Jacques smiled when Teddy introduced himself.
You're new? I wouldn't know. People don't stop at my desk that often. They think I'm a computer nerd.
Whatever gives them that idea.
Jacques frowned, then his face lit up in a big smile. He pointed to his computer.
Yes, yes, good one. That's what I am.
What do you do at the computer?
I monitor reservations.
You mean plane reservations?
Yes, and hotel. Not so glamorous, but every now and then something comes up, like the Arms Conference a few years back.
Arms Conference?
Well, not an official conference, of course, but a bunch of international arms dealers met in Paris to buy and sell. They haven't tried that again. It didn't go very well for them.
Nothing since? Teddy said.
Nothing that ever pans out. I got a hit last week of a suspected arms dealer coming to town. A couple of them, actually, both staying at Larrington Hotel. It looked promising, perhaps a clandestine business meeting, but it turned out they were both there for other purposes entirely.
That's disappointing.
Not at all. I'd rather have nothing going on than get a pat on the back for finding something.
Are you French?
Jacques smiled his big smile again.
What gave me away?
Then you would know.
Where's a good place to get a cup of coffee around here in the morning? Ah, Café du Soleil, right around the corner. Ask anyone.
Teddy thanked him and moved on to the next desk. Agent Reynolds came back from the bathroom. Before joining Teddy, he stopped to talk to Jacques.
What was he asking you about?
Jacques looked after Teddy, then back at the agent.
A place to eat.
32. Teddy finished his interviews without incident. He'd been there 2 hours and hadn't seen anything particularly suspicious. Lance would think he was slipping. Teddy left the embassy and strolled a few blocks, looking at the novelties in shop windows. As expected, Agent Reynolds was following him. Luckily, his shadow was not.
It would have been hard to lose one and not the other. Teddy walked one more block just to make sure Agent Reynolds was the only one taking an interest in him, and hailed a cab. He took it straight to the Gare de Lyon railway station, got out, and went downstairs to the bank of long-term lockers. He opened locker 26, which contained $10,000 and Melville Melbourne's passport. He took out $500, closed the locker, and left, making sure Agent Reynolds was close enough to have seen what he did. Outside, he took evasive action, just good enough to be convincing, but not good enough to be effective. After that, he led Agent Reynolds to his apartment. He went in, sat on the bed, and looked around. It was every bit as depressing as a deep-cover agent's apartment should be. Teddy took out a burner phone and called Dino. "Everything all set?"
"Hey, it's not rocket science," Dino said.
"That's why I ask. You're a police commissioner. You can command a citywide task force. It doesn't mean you can tie your shoe."
"Viv especially helps me with that. This was not a problem."
"You're there now?"
"Yes."
"Where is it?" Dino relayed the address. Teddy didn't write it down. He didn't need to, and he didn't want to create a document he had to worry about people seeing. Teddy left the apartment. He went through the same elusive measures as before, only subtly more effective. Within minutes, Agent Reynolds was nowhere to be seen. Teddy figured the young man would use the opportunity to search his apartment and check out the railway locker. It was a 10-minute taxi ride, far enough for comfort, but not so far as to be annoying. Teddy got out 2 blocks away. He walked down the street to a small townhouse. He went up on the stoop and rang the bell for 2A. Moments later, he was buzzed in the door. He went upstairs and found Dino waiting with the apartment door open.
"It's about time," Dino said. "This is a depressing place to have to hang out in."
"Well, that's encouraging," Teddy said. "I see you know my taste in dwellings." The apartment was indeed drab, not unlike the other one Teddy had rented. A suitcase stood just inside the door. "You didn't unpack for me?" Teddy said.
"I didn't want a lecture on snooping through your things."
"Well, this is exactly what I need, an apartment no one knows about to balance out the apartment everyone knows about."
"Except you have to make sure you're not followed every time you use it."
"So?"
"Isn't that a major pain in the ass?"
"You loved making sure you weren't followed, and you know it."
"I was supposed to make sure I wasn't followed?"
Teddy's cell phone rang. That is, his Dressler cell phone. He took it out. "Hello?" "Felix?" It took him a second to realize that was him. "Yes? This is Kristen Rowan. I'm one of the many agents you met today." "Actually, I remember you, probably because you weren't a snotty hard-ass." She laughed. "I looked for you and you'd left." "I make my own hours. It's one of the perks of the job."
"I tried that once. Norton docked me."
"How'd you get my number?"
"I'm a CIA agent."
"They teach you things like that?"
"Yeah, codes and stuff. You want me to show you?"
"Is that why you called?"
"I was actually wondering what you were doing for dinner."
"I'm new in town. I have no plans."
"You do now. Meet me at 6 in front of the Sacré-Cœur."
"Where is that?"
"I thought you were an agent," she said, and hung up.
33. Agent Kristen Rowan had taken time to change from her office clothes into a simple red sheath dress. Teddy appreciated the effort and the result. She glided up to him on the steps of the Sacré-Cœur and completely upstaged the imposing stone basilica. She smiled.
"Well, I see you found it."
"Was that deliberate?"
"What?"
"Choosing the Sacré-Cœur?
I had to ask my cabbie where one of the most famous landmarks in Paris was. Now, the Louvre, I'd have known, or the Arc de Triomphe, but the Sacre Coeur, I wasn't sure.
Did that make you feel foolish?
I always feel foolish around attractive women. I don't have to look for an excuse. In our business, embarrassment is a luxury. Shall we have dinner?
I hope so.